I believe humans can learn to see life at work in themselves and all systems, which is really when you can see things at work, you're seeing the engine of life and you're learning to transform yourself and other systems by better able to see how they are at work. We are taught to know things as parts that somehow add up to a whole, not to understand them as working wholes.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we are always happy to thank our sponsor for Business Second Opinion, Guayaki. Right now, I actually have a fresh can of lemon elation sitting cold next to me to help carry me through the day. Guayaki brews an enlivening beverage from naturally caffeinated and nourishing leaves from a species of holly that you all might know as mate. It contains 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. We hope you're going to check out this beverage with your friends and family, and please let us know what you think. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion, usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how you can work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout. And with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So last episode, we started tackling a question we get quite a bit here at Business Second Opinion that goes something like this. Carol and Zach, what got us into the mess that we're in and how do we get out of it? Whether it's COVID-19 or questionable human resource practices, when we look out at the world, we continue to believe that how we think filters, influences, and determines what we can think about. In essence, our critical thinking skills, or lack thereof, are how we continue to find ourselves as a society falling into a ditch after ditch after ditch. So we presented a framework to help build better thinking capability in ourselves and in you, our listeners.
Yeah, you know, I know this is true for you too. My belief is that we need some pretty big changes, and I've come up with what I think are the four foundational changes on how we go about understanding our world and how we pursue change. We started with that last time, did the part one. I'm offering here a contrasting framework to our authors from Harvard Business Review on what critical thinking is and how it is done, and particularly what capabilities you need to be building and using to be able to have critical thinking skills. These four things to me underlie everything we do here at Business Second Opinion. So first, we need to change how we learn and formulate knowledge and how we share it with others. I call this, well, most educators call this epistemology. It's how we know and learn. We have outdated, incomplete, and sometimes completely wrong-headed ways of coming to know and how we share that with others. We also looked a bit at cosmology, or our paradigm for how the world works. Are we a clock? Are we a machine? Are we a rat maze? Is it human-centered? What paradigm are we in?
Second, we need to change how we think the world works, which we've often heard called a paradigm shift and is definitely not an easy task. This is called a cosmology.
Yes. Absolutely. So today, we're going to look at two more of those foundational aspects. So we did epistemology and cosmology. Our third term after cosmology, in terms of the foundation we need, is to have a better idea of how humans work specifically. Their psychology, their mentation, why they behave the way they do. We need an actual better framing process than what is considered now to be normal. And we need to look within that about what capability it takes to see paradigms. You said it's not easy. And then use them as a lens for innovation and systems change.
And fourth, that leads us to needing to see the foundation of everything as a capability challenge and in need of a developmental approach. We have a capability crisis that underlies all these other crises, and we need to have a massive systemic way to shift that.
Yeah, I really agree with you. So our work today is to offer these last two windows on the framework to be able to think better and act better because you have greater capability to do so. and why we see Harvard Business Review's authors' advice on the subject, and in fact, most authors in Harvard Business Review, as not only incomplete, but not very helpful, for especially in the case of disruption that we have now, and when innovation is called for.
You know, most advice on critical thinking skills treats how thinking works as an inability to see reality as separate subjects. We actually pull those back as one subject and call it discerning the working of life or reality.
So people probably remember that our third subject is ontology, which is really the study and understanding of the working of being or beingness, what it means to be a being, or in our case, a human being. But there are also non-human beings that you study when you're looking at this, like Earth and life sheds. Those are beings. They have a being form. But let's start with humans. An ontology will always, you know, what we believe about humans in this case will always be the source of any theory of change we hold. And we will impose it into social systems. But, you know, the crazy thing is, even all that's happening, most of our ontology, our beliefs about how humans work, is invisible to us. And it needs to become starkly apparent and to be examined, which is a bit of what we're starting at today.
Then we are speaking about what's alive. We have science working on that for sure, but it's usually with fragments and parting things out. Isolation and counting of individual variables is kind of what I'm talking about here. So we need to have an ontology of the living processes of wholes, particularly in how humans work.
Yeah, for sure. So let's look at it through kind of a regenerative lens of our school, capital S school, which we call a developmental school with a developmental ontology. For over 70 years, we've been working with this idea. I mean, not you and I personally, 42 years I've been in it, but it preceded me. The ontology of that really gives you a way to look at how did we get in this mess, but more importantly, how do we get out? It's based on understanding first and foremost that human beings are born incomplete. They did not arrive fully finished and ready to function.
Right. And so we actually all know this on some level because we consider parents and schools the ones who will evolve us to be more fully contributing and functioning human beings. But the problem lies in what these institutions assume their aim is. Ultimately, they shoot for making their students and children happy and successful, which on its face doesn't sound so bad. But on reflection, this is a pretty self-centered aim. Plus, when considering a career, 65% of people cite their goals as being success-oriented, like becoming rich, famous, or powerful. To be fair, they don't always use those words, but even for parents, those are the three drivers cited in surveys for what their career they want their kids to attain. In the end, this is pretty limiting.
Yeah, for the parents, the kids, the teachers, all involved. But that's actually a perfect setup for the second cornerstone that I think we have to think about with ontology that leads us to a way of viewing humans that we can't see. Human beings are pretty mechanical, like sound asleep to their potential. And therefore, they stay asleep. They keep themselves asleep. They walk through their lives asleep. And as a result of that, you know, you're really limited. You kind of like blinders on the whole time. They follow routines. They want familiarity rather than creativity. But, you know, this does not have to be the case. But without development, it is the norm.
Right. It's like when we assume creativity and critical thinking are rare and only comes with a few very special people. You hear this often when people are categorized as geniuses or even low performers or even less than that. But this is not true, and it's not even necessary. It's just a latent, undeveloped capability, not an inborn or missing characteristic played out uniquely for each being. All humans can learn to offer themselves in their mind as an instrument for evolving life capacities.
Yeah, a core tenet of mine, this is awakening potential. And that's what an ontology is about for me for humans. So it's a combination of the awakeness and therefore being able to see potential and seeing each whole that is alive with that same potential. It really shows up in something called essence that defines it. And it's when you seek to, or each entity seeks to express that, that essence becomes alive. And you begin to notice nature does not repeat.
And we know this is true at the physical level of DNA, right? Like, even look at a starfish, which all of them look pretty similar. Each have their own DNA. But before I mess this up, Carol, is that actually essence?
Well, no. Essence is more like the DNA at the level of being, not the physiology. Essence is a basic inner quality of something or someone that gives that thing and that specific person their distinctive and unique character of being. They may physically have shared characteristics, but they at the being level do not. But DNA may frame how we look, but it has nothing to do with character.
Most people assume you mean personality, actually, right? So what happens if we put all of our attention on that instead?
So personality is a socially conditioned process by our environment, our circumstances, parents, churches, military. It is accidental in some ways, accident of birth. Who do we get to be influenced by? On the other hand, essence is more innate. It's inner. It is not conditioned from the outside. It is spoken of in many philosophical schools and many spiritual traditions. Our sciences have never studied it, or when they do, they study it as a thing, not as something that is an inner process. The only thing they really study is this whole nature-nurture idea, which is really more about just DNA and conditioning from personality. So it's not a very definitive study. It doesn't help you get to essence.
And actually, an easy way to see this is in children. Right? Like, each child is so clearly unique. Even twins who share DNA have their own distinct way of being. Unfortunately, humans become conditioned to conform for the most part and not express their essence. And when they're famous for that unique expression, we claim it is a gift of birth rather than who they actually are. And that's possible for all human beings. Essence is a pattern generator of a being and needs to be nurtured. I have to work to remember that essence fuels me when I'm awake, and personality is the thing that drives me when I'm not.
So for today, you know, we've spoken about essence extensively in our other podcasts. So instead of taking that around another round deeper, I'd like to go look at the last aspect of ontology that I think is important. So I believe humans can learn to see life at work in themselves and all systems, which is really when you can see things at work, you're seeing the engine of life and you're learning to transform yourself and other systems by better able to see how they are at work. We are taught to know things as parts that somehow add up to a whole, not to understand them as working wholes.
So let me give you an example. We love watching shows and listening to podcasts like How Stuff Works, or sites like Coursera, where they offer courses on literally, as far as I can tell, almost any subject. So we can see how the subject or a subject works in context. But these offerings are filling in a devastating void that should actually be happening in education. In other words, starting with holes in how they work.
Yeah, and we know that kids do better on tests in life, but we don't teach it that way. And I think the reason is an ontological one, how we equate humans with machines or rat paradigms, which therefore those ontological processes infuse all of education. Systems at work is always easy to understand once you learn the skills in doing it and to engage with these holes rather than parting them out like cars in a junkyard so that we think we know them because we know all the parts.
It's interesting because I actually experience this quite often in school. And I can remember a moment distinctly in college when I was struggling quite a bit to understand the why of calculus. I kept asking myself, but why do we do this way? And where do these ideas come from? And why does this even matter? But that was not the goal of calculus class, if anyone will remember math class. While being consumed with that notion, my grades started to drop and I became overwhelmed. My teacher at the time was not all that much help either. So I turned my brain off and just memorized abstract formulas and just kind of did everything rote. And if the goals of the class had been different, who knows how far I could have gone with calculus. But that kind of thinking wasn't rewarded, so I abandoned the subject completely. It had no relevance or grounding for me. You know, as I'm talking, I realize this is why on job trainings, in regard to job trainings, like on the job trainings are better than classroom training, and why imaging systems at work that surrounds that job is even more powerful.
Yeah. And you're describing the current ontology perfectly, because it's fractured and it's misguided, and it doesn't lead to understanding humans or what they're going to use, the work they're going to use, how they're going to do it in life. This is core to what got us into the mess. It's attempting to make sense of life from parts and not working from the whole and how it works. You know, overall, we need a new ontology based on humans as evolving beings that are not yet fully developed, but can be, and they're not trained in knowledge and career only. They really have to learn to be awake. I say that knowing that that takes a lot of work, because I know I have to work on me, and I have to be awake more of the time. And I have to make studying the working of stuff as core to me, and that's what I believe we have to shift parents and educators to doing.
So that actually leads us to the fourth shift we need to make in order to get us out of this mess, which is to have a belief that all challenges and opportunities are capability voids. And more than that, we need to use systems thinking as integral to all institutions, from parenting to education to work life.
Yeah. So what you're talking about in terms of capability, I call this last window about ableness voids, about having a developmental technology, that's a word I'll describe in a minute, that is really about ongoing capability building, capability development. So technology is about to have a way to convert science and philosophy into functioning action that can bring about change. So think about technology in manufacture setting or in a computer, that's obvious. But the same thing is true. We draw on something. We draw on a philosophy and or a science, and we bring that together. That has to be developed, and it's missing in most institutions. You know, instead, they have approaches that are more like, I'm laughing, my grandmother would laugh at me. They're more like patchwork quilts without a pattern, or with a quilting group who doesn't speak to one another, or a guild that they're all in that does not reflect on what's being produced by its members and with no shared intention.
I grew up in an oftentimes loud and overwhelming household. As I got older, yelling and debates became the norm. And I always vowed not to treat my kids that way. So fast forward to today, and it turns out that I don't wake up every day as father of the year. I know, big shock. But I have built a capability to catch myself as I become agitated and angry. So instead of digging in my heels and arguing until I'm red in the face, from time to time, I can stop and reconsider a different approach. I don't always do this, but this capability, when I engage with it, serves me in being a parent, husband, business owner, and son to the best of my ability. In the end, I realized that all of this is about how I choose to engage rather than being a victim of my upbringing.
Right. And so it is a capability crisis we have. I loved your phrase for that. And our school has a deeply sourced and tested technology that has three cornerstones, which are built around what you're talking about. First, it is sourced from a philosophy of capability development, and that philosophy is based in caring.
Right. The idea that we move beyond only caring for others to enabling self-determination. We have many of our institutions structured now to use compassion for those who have less than we do, which is a good thing. But we don't develop the institutions, the systems that contain them, or the people in them to express their essence and grow the capabilities needed to do so.
Right. And so we're moving from caring for to caring in support of this future development you're talking about. That's a good description. This aspect of the technology that's working on capability in our school has an articulated set of principles and premises to work from that can become, if you intend to, integrate them into all your activity. There needs to be frequent reflections on how well you're doing on that and examining the framework itself like you're doing as a father.
Yeah, when I'm working a framework, I have this simultaneous experience of me working a framework, working a subject while I'm working on me. And it's really hard to describe, but it's like I can't see all that I want to see about a particular business opportunity or project unless I'm engaging in this way. It's like I have horse blinders on or something. And so much drops out when I approach something on automatic. So the subject, framework, and my thinking all become deadened when I do that. I really do, as they say, miss the forest for the trees.
Yeah. And so another cornerstone of our school is the principles of personal development evolution. Because, as I said, we're born incomplete. And without personal development, we can never become fully human. This cornerstone is about being awake and really being able to engage in completing our potential.
Yeah, like not getting our own way, right? To see where our opportunities to grow are. So being a co-founder, my business partner and I don't always see eye to eye. Shocker, right? Like anyone who's been in business with anybody else. But instead of arguing a perspective on a client or project, I have to watch me engaging with him in order to see a different way to approach that situation. Otherwise, I become blinded to bigger, more purposeful opportunities we might be able to engage with. And as a young company, those aha moments are invaluable to how we grow the business for the long haul.
Our third cornerstone is having a technology that is expressing ourselves through a living systems theory of change. And you're doing that toward systems actualization. We've talked about that a bit before. So we're talking about systems being able to live out their potential. And knowing how to think this way and how to manage ourselves gives us a chance of being able to contribute to that.
And that's what most of our Business Second Opinion podcasts are about, how organizational systems can work when they're working from a developmental technology used to design strategy, leadership, and work design.
And also having societies that are made up of communities at work and the social systems being able to serve the purpose they were intended. If you listen to our podcast regularly, and thank you, we know how many of you do, you begin to see the patterns of the technology we're talking about. Or if you want more on that, you can join our Change Agent Develop community and other communities we have to get up really close and personal.
And with a bit more reflection, you can see it infused with a particular epistemology, cosmology, and ontology, which has a coherent and energy-transforming effect on people who use it and those and what they touch.
We are taking off this summer at Business Second Opinion for new recordings. We will have archived ones playing all summer long. But watch for a new podcast that will be coming up in June based on my new book, The Regenerative Life. You will hear interviews with the people who were involved in the action learning and research project on using many of the ideas we're talking here about, particularly in developing ourselves in the 9 roles which are foundational to society. Check out carolsanford.com under The Regenerative Life or follow our show notes, which you can find on our website.
Carol Sanford Institute has been offering development communities for over 40 years with online versions for over a decade now. So we're getting pretty good at it. What we're offering is a set of free morning meetings now where you look at how to transform uncertainty into action based on living systems thinking to inform our lives in times of crisis, your daily decisions and actions, and how you could help others. So go ahead and search on Facebook for the Regenerative Life Communities Group. And don't forget to join the newsletter at carolsanford.com to get more information on upcoming events.
One of those specific new events is a new community, the Regenerative Educator Community, one of the 9 roles that was in the learning project and in the book. For developmental roles, this is for any developmental role of people who consider themselves as an educator, whether you're inside institutions, organizations, or as a professional. The community is established to enable members to work with a developmental epistemology and have it be based in the 7 first principles of regeneration. Can you imagine an education system operating that way? Check out seed-communities.com to learn more. And you can look on there then under Regenerative Life Offerings.
And for women entrepreneurs, check out the same link for communities just for you.
And keep listening, please. We love having your questions or conversations, you speaking with us about regenerative paradigms and practices. I'm going to start over because there was so much background noise, okay? 3, 2, 1. And please do keep listening to Business Second Opinion for more ideas on working with regenerative paradigms and practices, and send us your questions. My new book, The Regenerative Life, has book clubs attached to it if you buy in bulk, and it's supported by workbooks and online workshops. Again, more at carolsanford.com.
And thanks again to our sponsors at Guayaki in your pursuit of regeneration with high integrity. By the way, if you want to get one of our Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us your article and topics on practices in business that you think need a second opinion. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter at @biz_second_opinion. If we use it to develop an episode, you get a mug. Also, your ratings and reviews on all the platforms you found us and where other people find us can help spread the word. Sign up for our newsletter so you can get connections to the show notes and much more.
And finally, thank you to Numi Tea. They sponsor our Business Second Opinion show notes and transcripts. And thank you to Babson College for sponsoring the Regenerative Business Summit and the prize annually. You can check out more about those on Business Second Opinion website and more about this podcast. And if you'd love to, join Numi Tea as a champion for this podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
This has been Business Second Opinion.